My talk is Where Do Thoughts Come From? And the subtitle is How Do We Train Our Minds? So I sometimes wonder where thoughts come from, especially the ones that seem to come randomly out of nowhere, the spontaneous ones. So sometimes I can decide to think about something like what to wear today or what to have for dinner. But times when I'm meditating and trying to have my attention and awareness on my breath, my mind will wander and thoughts arise spontaneously, seemingly out of nowhere. And some time can go by before I notice this. I recently listened to a symposium sponsored by the Upaya Zen Institute, and it was called the Varela Symposium. The title of it was Exploring the Great Landscape of Awareness, Insight from Neuroscience, Cognitive Science, and Buddhism. So they talked about types of consciousness and awareness, and they named that moment when you notice that your mind has wandered, when you sort of come back to sort of consciousness about it. And that can be when you're meditating or when you're reading or driving or listening to somebody and your mind wanders. So that moment when you catch that and come back, they named that metta awareness. And it's like being aware of what you're aware of and what you're thinking of. Or tracking your mind and attention. And I found in this conference, I found the neuroscience parts very interesting, if somewhat abstract and a bit difficult to understand. But there was one neuroscientist from UBC named Kalina Kristoff, and she described experiments that they've been doing using fMRI scans, so functional MRI scans, where they can look at what parts of the brain get activated with various activities or exercises. So they can look sort of right into the activity that the nurse is doing in the brain. So they did some studies with very experienced meditators, you know, people who'd been meditating for decades. And the reason they chose them is that it's not actually an easy thing to recognize when a thought arises, when the thought first appears. And I find myself, I don't often notice the minute or the moment that a thought arises. I usually, a fairly long way down the path of a memory or a story before I notice it. But apparently this is a skill that can be learned, and it's most often found in people who've done a lot of meditating. So in this experiment, they have people get into a meditative state and then push a button as soon as they notice the thought arising in their mind. And when they did that, they could see on the fMRI what part and what neurons were firing in the brain. And they found that it took 4 seconds for people to be conscious of a thought and push the button after they noted activity in the brain. So that kind of means the brain was producing the thought before we're conscious of it. And that was apparently pretty interesting and exciting discovery. And I'm not really sure how and why this matters, but it's interesting that people are looking into the brain to see, you know, where thoughts come from. And it's interesting to me also that one can notice the arising of a thought, and it's become a new ambition of mine to develop this skill. But really, I think it is a mystery about how thinking and the mind work. In Buddhism, the mind is considered a sixth sense. So it's sensing thoughts, just as the ears sense sounds. So is the mind located in the brain, which seems to be what the neuroscientists are assuming? And in Buddhism, you often hear the term heart-mind, as if the two are one. So where are they located? I don't know. But I'd like to turn now to a discourse that the Buddha gave as recorded in the Pali Sutras, and it's called Two Kinds of Thought. And in it, the Buddha describes how he prepared his mind as he approached enlightenment. So I'm gonna read parts from this sutra. So the Buddha's addressing monks who are assembled before him, and they usually call them bhikkhus. So he says, bhikkhus, before my enlightenment, while I was still only an unenlightened bodhisattva, it occurred to me, Suppose that I divide my thoughts into two classes. Then I set on one side thoughts of sensual desire, thoughts of ill will, and thoughts of cruelty. And I set on the other side thoughts of renunciation, thoughts of non-ill will, and thoughts of non-cruelty. As I abided thus, diligent, ardent, and resolute, the thought of sensual desire arose in me. I understood thus, this thought of sensual desire has arisen in me. This leads to my own affliction, to others' affliction, and to the affliction of both. It obstructs wisdom, causes difficulties, and leads away from nirvana. When I considered, this leads to my own affliction, it subsided in me. When I considered, this leads to others' affliction, it subsided in me. When I considered, this leads to the affliction of both, it subsided in me. When I considered, this obstructs wisdom, causes difficulties, and leads away from nirvana, it subsided in me. Whenever a thought of sensual desire arose in me, I abandoned it, removed it, did away with it. So she find it kind of comforting to know that the Buddha had afflictive thoughts and feelings just like we do. These are natural human tendencies. And it's also encouraging to know that there is a way to tame and overcome these and to become a Buddha free of thoughts of sensual desire and ill will and cruelty. The way the Buddha describes this requires us first to notice the thoughts and then to observe what states they lead to. And then, if that is not a state that we want to dwell in, that intention is enough to allow us to let go of it. So although this sounds quite straightforward, it's not described as easy. He says, as I abided thus, diligent, ardent, and resolute. So this sounds a lot to me like the Eightfold Path, where you've got right intention and right effort and right concentration. So he goes on to say, whenever a thought of sensual desire arose in me, I abandoned it, removed it, did away with it. A bit further in the sutra, he says, bhikkhus, whatever a bhikkhu frequently thinks and ponders upon, that will become the inclination of his mind. So what I'm hearing here is that we can train our minds, and we don't have to feel bad about our unwholesome thoughts. We do need to recognize them and acknowledge them and observe the effect that they create, both for ourselves and for others. And then we need to let them go. Norman Fisher did a talk on this sutra, the two kinds of thoughts. And he gave an example of if a candle flame is burning and you put your finger in it. If you leave it there, your finger will burn. And it's the same kind of thing if you have a thought like of ill will or cruelty. You see that it leads to pain and leads you away from wisdom, but you keep doing it. It's like leaving your finger in the flame. So how do we train our minds? There's a Tibetan Buddhist practice called Lojong, which is a basic mind training, a training in compassion. And Kate and Michael did a Dharma series on this in January, which I really enjoyed. And Lojong is a mind training that involves repeating phrases or slogans to kind of bring that the idea and feelings of compassion into your mind and life. And so you say them over and over. And we do this in our practice too, either by using the Lojong or by using a mantra or chanting. Sometimes you can create the same sort of thing by reading certain books, you know, that are inspiring to you. So Norman Fisher actually wrote a book on the Lojong called Training in Compassion. And he talks, I'm going to just read a bit from the introduction where he talks about mind training. And this section is called How Can We Train the Mind? And he says, most of us think our minds the way we are, our basic attitudes and reactions, as being fixed by our genetic inheritance and life experience. We assume that our basic feelings and reactions are simply a given, indelibly fixed in us. We can learn information and specific skills, which is why we go to school or invest in training programs. Yet our basic character remains the same. If we're genetically or environmentally programmed to be angry, sad, depressed, or cheerful people, we will continue to be that way more or less throughout our lives. We are who we are. But contemporary cognitive science is proving this assumption false. In fact, our minds, our character, our patterns of thought and emotion are much more fluid than we thought they were. Our brains are renewed through activity and reflection. They are, as scientists say, plastic. So our minds are trainable. Our basic patterns of thought and feeling can be different. This is news we are only now in the process of fully digesting. So I think that's encouraging news. And for myself, when I think of training, I often think of, it makes me think of training a dog. This can be done by rewarding certain behaviors and not allowing others. And it requires endless repetition and patience. I've tried this several times in my life without much success. I've never been too good at it. I hope that my mind is not as poorly behaved as my dogs are. But with consistency and diligence, a dog can develop the habits and behaviors that we want them to have. So just to get back to the sutra, two kinds of thoughts. This next part, I'll just read it. It says, just as in the last month of the rainy season, in the autumn, when the crops thickened, a cowherd would guard his cows by constantly tapping and poking them on this side and that with a stick to check and curb them. Why is that? Because he sees that he could be flogged, imprisoned, fined, or blamed if he let them stray into the crops. So too, I saw in unwholesome states danger, degradation, and defilement. And in wholesome states, the blessing of renunciation, the aspect of cleansing. So I find that this is quite a powerful image of the cowherd. And constantly poking at the cattle so they don't stray into the crops. So keeping an eye on the cattle, just like we keep an eye on our thoughts and kind of poke and prod them so they don't stray into unwholesomeness. So as this sutra goes on, as it's common in quite a few sutras, there's a lot of repetition and a description of what not to do followed by what to do. So the Buddha goes on to say, sort of turning to the opposite type of thought, as I abided thus, diligent, ardent, and resolute, a thought of renunciation arose in me. I understood thus, this thought of renunciation has arisen in me. This does not lead to my own affliction or to others' affliction or to the affliction of both. It aids wisdom, does not cause difficulties, and leads to nirvana. If I think and ponder upon this thought, even for a night, even for a day, even for a night and a day, I see nothing to fear from it. But with excessive thinking and pondering, I might tire my body. And when the body is tired, the mind becomes strained. And when the mind is strained, it is far from concentration. So I studied my mind internally, quieted it, brought it to singleness, and concentrated it. Why is that? So that my mind should not be strained. So that, not to overthink, that's the sort of caution there. You can notice those wholesome thoughts and let them abide in us, but remain concentrated and quiet in our mind. And so the next thing I'm just going to read, there's another metaphor of using the cowherd again. And this is kind of when we're talking about noticing the wholesome or liberating thoughts. So just as in the last month of the hot season, when all the crops have been brought inside the villages, a cowherd would guard his cows while staying at the root of a tree or out in the open, since he needs only to be mindful that the cows are there. So too, there is need for me only to be mindful that those states were there. He's referring to the wholesome states. So there's two metaphors of the cowherd, from going from poking and prodding and needing to guide the cow to just sitting and being aware of where they are, seem to describe a progression from the one of constant vigilance and checking and redirecting to a time of just maintaining awareness and keeping mindful of thoughts and states. Very end of the sutra, the Buddha instructs, meditate, bhikkhus. Do not delay, or else you will be relegated. This is our instruction to you. So saying, meditate, develop mindfulness, cultivate kindness and compassion. So there's a lot in this fairly brief sutra, but I find it really powerful and quite practical, actually, something we can use. Now, I've got one more analogy, and this is not one from the Buddha, but for me, sort of another way to look at mind training is to compare how we treat our minds to how we treat our bodies, because they're likely a bit similar. So if we don't exercise our bodies, and if we eat junk food and we don't rest, we won't be healthy, and we might not have the bodies that we wish to have. And I think it's the same with our minds. If we don't exercise them, right? Concentration, mindfulness, they will be mushy. And if we feed them junk food, which could be seen as unwholesome thoughts and behaviors, gossip, junk television, self-absorbed thoughts, competition and judgment and jealousy, I'm quite familiar with all of these, then we won't have the minds that we want. And if we don't exercise them, we keep feeding them those junk or poison things. But if we feed them mind's wholesome thoughts and nourish them with kind activities, we will develop the minds that we prefer. And one of the chants that we do very often during a sesshin is the meal chants, the chants before we eat. And there's a section in here that's always really captivated me, and it comes after we invoke all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and acknowledge the effort that brought the food and whether we're worthy of it. I'm just about to eat, to take the first bite, and it goes, the first portion is to end all evil. The second portion is to cultivate all good. The third portion is to free all beings. And I really love that word cultivate, because it's like an action we can do. We can plant the seeds of kindness. We can water them and tend them and they will flourish. So we can cultivate good. So I'm just going to end with acknowledging, as I used dogs as an example in this talk, just to honor them with a poem. And it's a poem by Mary Oliver. She wrote actually a whole book of poems about dogs called Dog Songs. So the title of this poem, my dog just perked up to listen to this, is How It Is With Us and How It Is With Them. We become religious, then we turn from it. Then we are in need, and maybe we turn back. We turn to making money, then we turn to the moral life. Then we think about money again. We meet wonderful people, but lose them in our busyness. We are, as the saying goes, all over the place. Steadfastness, it seems, is more about dogs than about us. One of the reasons we love them so much. So I think that we can bring that sort of sense of appreciation and compassion to our minds, just as we would to a dog, as we're training them. So just for an activity for us, just, I don't know that we would break into groups today. Maybe just, it's going to do just a little bit of a guided exercise, and then we could have just a round of open sharing where we can turn off the mute. Just anybody who wants to share what they've experienced could do that. Sound all right? So what I'm going to invite you to do right now, and you can just kind of turn within and take a minute to review your day today. So just kind of go through what you did, who you saw, your activities. And bring to mind the types of thoughts that you have during the day. And just take a minute sort of to play back the movie. What you were doing, what the types of thoughts were. And as you're doing that, just notice, could you divide these thoughts into two classes? So if you can, bring to mind and sort of focus on something today, or if nothing comes up for today, just yesterday, where you have self-centered thoughts of attachment, so thoughts of sensual desire, thoughts of ill will, thoughts of cruelty. And if you didn't have any of those, you're a better person than me. And just focus for a bit on that time or incident and the types of thoughts you were having that were arising in you. And then notice, what did that lead to? What did those thoughts lead to? And were you able to let them go? And then now, see if you can remember and focus on a time when you had some self-releasing thoughts. Thoughts of kindness or thoughts of compassion, thoughts of forgiveness. And just be aware of where you were, what was happening, what were the thoughts that were arising. And then notice, what did that lead to? And were you able to let go of those thoughts? So now maybe we could sort of gather, and I guess we can't all unmute at the same time because it gets too murky. But just if anybody feels sort of moved to share what came up for them about thoughts that they noticed or what they led to. So anything like that from that exercise, it'd be really interesting to hear from you if you feel drawn to that. Or if not, just noticing how you have trained or are training your mind, sort of what strategies or exercises do you use, and what changes have you noticed from that. So maybe we can just open it up if anybody feels like sharing. I think it's a small enough group that we could try that.